All right, welcome back to Sports Central. NFL draft gets underway later on this week. Which Penn State players will be selected in the draft? We know that Micah Parsons, Jason Owe, very good shot to go in the first round. Pat Freiermuth, probably in the second round. After those three guys, though, who ends up going where? Thomas Frank Carr joins us from Blue White Illustrated. Also has a new podcast. Frank, tell the folks where they can find your new podcast.
Well, the name of the podcast is Let Me Be Frank, and actually this is the first time I'll be telling anybody this. It is now going to be hosted on For the Bloggy on YouTube, which is a Penn State sports blog. We've come to an agreement, so I'll be having all my videos posted there. And, of course, if you find it anywhere you find podcasts on Spotify, Anchor, any of those places.
Good stuff. Always enjoy chatting some draft stuff with T. Frank. We're going to get into the extra Penn State players here in a minute. But there's some interesting comments out today from Todd McShay from ESPN. He says, quote, Micah Parsons is going to fall a little bit further than all of us anticipate. So he could be a really good pickup and a value. And he's talking about later on the first round for the Washington football team. I think they picked 19th. But what McShay says is Micah Parsons is the best defensive player in this draft based solely on tape, but he's got some off-the-field issues, some past character stuff, and some things that teams are concerned about in terms of bringing things in. Todd McShay's not just making this up. He's talking to people. Now, whether he or not he's hearing the full truth, T. Frank, or if there's some gamesmanship going on here and some agents or teams are telling him one thing so that maybe in hopes they could actually get Micah Parsons themselves because he does. Look, this crap happens. I mean, this stuff does happen all the time. You like to evaluate players, study film, prepare analysis based on what you see from a football player standpoint. But when this quote-unquote off-the-field concern stuff comes into play, how are we supposed to read into this with any player? You know, this is Micah Parsons, a Penn State star, but how do you read into all of these things when you're trying to gauge which teams are going to pick which players?
So it gets really murky, doesn't it? Because then it becomes as much of a moral thing as it does a X's and O's, football, skill position, physical ability thing. And it's really to each individual themselves as well. You know, what you're comfortable with, what you're comfortable with rooting for, what sort of person you want to have on your football team, and to not have all the information because, you know, I'm working with the same amount of information that you likely are, Corey. And if you talk to Micah Parsons more times than me, you probably have a more in-depth view of what Micah is and isn't as a person than, you know, people who only had a couple of interactions with him. So really, it's a murky sort of thing, and that's why a lot of people who do film evaluation that aren't a part of a team and don't get to talk to these players on a regular basis kind of just leave it aside because you don't really know what to do with it. And a lot of these things, while they didn't happen in the last 2 years, did happen, you know, they did happen.
But so, the problem is we don't know what the hell happened. I mean, that's
right.
That's what's interesting. Right. Here's the way things work in a news business. And T. Frank has been around sports media for a long time. You might hear something, and I'm not talking about Micah Parsons specifically. I'm talking about just the way it might go with an athlete, entertainer, politician, that kind of thing. You might hear something, and you feel pretty good that it's true, but you don't want to just throw out, well, I heard he did this, because then, you know, especially if there's no charges filed or anything, or you know, maybe it's never been made fully public. Then,
or he was a minor, Corey.
Correct.
A lot of the stuff that's coming up is from when Micah Parsons was in high school.
Right, and you're running the risk of ruining a guy's reputation, that kind of thing. And there can be some dicey water. But T. Frank, when you're just throwing out there's off the field concerns, it's doing the same thing. I mean, if if there legitimately are off-the-field concerns, and again, I've been in the news business for 30 years, I know why maybe some of these folks aren't specifying, well, I heard when he was in 11th grade, he did this. And in the Penn State and the Isaiah Humphries lawsuit, maybe he did this too that we haven't heard public. Okay, but this is big business. There's millions of dollars at stake. These guys are ripping this guy's reputation anyway. When Todd McShay says there's off-the-field concerns, you're taking that to a level where, you know, it's gonna hurt the guy. You drop 10, 15, 20 spots in the draft, that's $8, $10, $15 million. And so
those things are – I would disagree that saying it publicly probably doesn't change the internal perception of every team.
Absolutely. That's a different discussion. We're going to get to the – hang on. We're going to get to every team can make their own decision. My point is the way the media does this, you know, if you're holding back information that you've got, but you're still comfortable throwing out, hey, there's off the field and character concerns about this guy, is that really fair to do?
So I'll attack it from this angle. All the things about Micah Parsons are known. So like there have been no recent incidents. You remember Laramie Tunsil with a video of him with the gas mask on, came out and dropped to like the 14th overall pick. That happened the day of the draft. So if Micah Parsons were arrested in the next 24 hours, that would drop his stock. Mm-hmm. But because all of the teams are able to weigh this stuff before they go in, their decisions have already been made. So they've already decided if they've squared away whether or not they like or don't like Micah Parsons. Now, if Todd McShay's talking to these teams, and these teams are giving him the indication that they're going to pass because they don't like what they found, then that is something that has already been happening. Like, it's Schrodinger's cat. Whether it is or it isn't is just in the box, and we don't know. But the reality is out there. So I think we do have to keep that in perspective. What it might change is any sort of endorsement deal he might get after the draft as a phenomenal athlete and as a former – seen as a top five pick. Those things, those are the dollars that I think will be affected by public perception.
And here's, as T. Frank was mentioning, it takes one team, okay? So maybe 27, 28. Look, the guy's a top 10 talent. And so if the team picking 12th says, I'm not all that concerned about some of this stuff that we've heard he might have done in high school, then they take him. If 14 teams are uncomfortable, the 15th team might take him. If six teams are uncomfortable and the seventh team likes him because they think, again, that's why the draft is so, it's all so secretive. You've got, was it the Philadelphia Eagles playing, their GM, I think, was playing rock, paper, scissors and Jeopardy with a guy over a Zoom call because they wanted to find out how competitive he was. How freaking stupid is that? He's playing rock, paper, scissors and Jeopardy with a guy with a potential prospect over a Zoom. These teams and these executives, who has any idea what they're thinking when it comes to some of this evaluation?
Yeah, I cringe every time I hear stuff like that because it really cuts at the heart. And it kind of exposes how sometimes this is very simple, right? So they want to know all the information. I don't know what you get out of rock, paper, scissors. I really don't. I mean, if you want to see how competitive the dude is, that's what football is. It's a I don't know. Every time that happens, I kind of shake my head and go, this is the thing that I'm in love with, and they're playing rock, paper, scissors with it. That doesn't help me.
Yeah, it's wild. And it gets underway in a couple of days. Thomas Frank Carr. So, again, we know Parsons, Owe, Freiermuth are going to go early. We talked about those a week or so ago. Who's the fourth player from Penn State picked?
Well, after that, it's a significant drop-off. But I'd say probably Shaka Toney would be the next guy that would go. And he might go anywhere from the very end of round three to the fifth round, I think somewhere in there. As a pass-rushing specialist, he's a guy that's going to be valued. But as a guy that you don't see as a full-time starter and you don't know how he projects to the next level, that's going to push his stock down significantly. So I'd say probably day three, starting in that time frame. But I'd be more thinking around the fifth round.
And Shaka Toney was better than Jason Owe last year at Penn State. Jason Owe has all these unbelievably freakish physical gifts. But that's just how things go. College production isn't the be-all, end-all when it comes to the way these NFL scouts are going to view things. Because, hey, Shaka Toney, do you have any doubt in your mind Shaka Toney was a more effective player last year than Jason Owe?
No, he was. As a run defender, Jason Owe was a superior player in a lot of ways. But when you talk about the thing that everyone cares about, pass rushing production, Shaka Toney has been one of the more productive and skilled, technically skilled players that has come through Penn State in a long time. So, I mean, his hand usage and his ability to affect tackles with his technique is better than what Yetur Gross-Matos had. But again, both Owe and Gross-Matos physically project the second level better. Like, they are better football players simply because Shaka Toney, at a certain point, is 245 pounds on a good day. Like, if you watch the way his weight fluctuated during the pandemic from when he was at home and he was 230 to when he came back and he was 250 to after the draft and he's 244, like, he clearly, keeping the weight on is a struggle. So that's a real thing that he's going to have to live with or find a way to work around the next level. And some guys, they're strong enough just naturally to overcome that. And he is not quite that when it comes to being a complete player, which is why he's a phenomenal pass rushing specialist who, you know, when he gets to the point of attack, when he gets to the top of the pocket, he has enough core strength to actually bend around to get to the quarterback. So he can affect the passer. But as far as being a complete player, it's just he's going to have to either play a different position or be situational, which is what drives down his value.
Good stuff there, Thomas Frank Carr. So if Shaka Toney goes fourth, how many other Penn State players get picked?
So this is going to be an interesting situation this year with what's going on in the post-draft world of undrafted free agents. Because of the pandemic and the free sixth year, the extra year of eligibility, there are less players available in this draft than there were previously. Now, while that probably won't affect the players drafted, it will affect who's available and how many players are available after the draft. So if someone really, really likes Will Fries as a project guard, he might go in the seventh round. If somebody really wants Lamont Wade on their team as far as being a slot safety hybrid, he might go in the seventh round. But aside from that, I think those two guys are the main guys I'm looking at that might be drafted. But, you know, I have late day three sort of opinions of what they project to at the next level.
And how about those undrafted guys that maybe they slip into the seventh round, but if not, how many guys end up signing a deal and getting a shot pretty quickly?
So obviously Michael Mennett is the other guy. And my problem when I watch his film is he's a technically sound guy and he's an athletic undersized center, but he's not overly athletic. So I don't really know what to do with that as far as what is the system he fits in? What is the skill set that he brings to? Because there are things he does well. I think that there are things that translate to playing football, you know, in the NFL, but it's just so specific that I don't know that, I think he'll make a 90-man roster this offseason because of the limited number of players, but I don't know his long-term future in that sense because I want to find something I think he does well. But there's technical things that he does from missing some blocks and not being alert in pass protection to not being athletic enough that if he's not exactly where he needs to be, he misses blocks on the second level. So that's the part where I think he's a very good college player, but I struggle to see it in the NFL.
Let's project one more. This is going to take a few years. Thomas Frank Carr joined us from Blue White Illustrated. Who will be the better NFL wide receiver, Jahan Dotson or Parker Washington?
I really like Parker Washington, so I'm going to go with Parker Washington. Just his ability to be multifaceted, I think that he can get end arounds and jet sweeps and be effective. He's strong. He's physically more what you're looking for as far as a football player with his explosive lower body strength. I want to see him get a little faster and be a little more decisive in his route running. But when I watched him last year, and I know that this is a stretch, but he reminds me of a little bit bigger Rondale Moore. It's kind of the mold I would put him in as far as a multidimensional weapon that can break tackles in the open field. And I really want him one-on-one versus some sad defensive back that is just going to get torched.
And look,
John Dotson has so many things I like, but there's more that I like about Washington.
And we'll get to see both this year. Parker Washington was a true freshman last year and very impressive. Look, John Dotson had a great year last year, and I think he can be an explosive Big Ten receiver. He can put up a lot of numbers in the Mike Yurcich offense, but it is interesting when you try to project to the next level. Parker Washington just at an earlier point in his career, an earlier age, has a lot of those skills that you're looking for. You think there's any chance that Parker Washington stays at Penn State longer than three seasons?
It'll depend on, I think, how this year goes and, what Mike Yurcich is able to unlock with the offense, because it does take quality targets from the quarterback to get you noticed.
Yeah.
So that's going to have to be a part of it.
And if he gets noticed more this year, then you get all this hype and everything going into next season. And if he's got all that kind of hype going into his junior season, then has a good year. That's what I'm talking about. He's still got 4 years of eligibility. That's what's so crazy about all these players. Sean Clifford has 2 years of eligibility left. All these seniors get to play another year. Last year basically didn't count. So Parker Washington was a freshman last year. It didn't even count. He has 4 years left. So
have you had a hard time deciding what you're calling these players?
Yes,
writing about
I hate it.
I've gone back and forth the whole time.
I hate it. Especially, and it came up a lot with the transfer portal guys, like in December and January. What are they, rising juniors or sophomore? That's something that maybe only us in the media probably care a whole lot about. But I'm right there with you. I hate trying to figure out what we're supposed, because again, Sean Clifford's a senior, but he's a junior. Yeah. And so then you kind of get into, do they want Sean Clifford around for two? That's a question for another day. Sean Clifford could be phenomenal if he sticks around for two more years. But do they want him for two more years if he's just average? So those are some interesting eligibility kind of questions that a lot of coaches around the country are going to have to be dealing with in the coming years. Hey, T. Frank, I appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for the insight. No, as always, I know you love this week since you really seem to enjoy the draft.
Oh, yeah. And I will. We're making pulled pork nachos. We always have a party here at the T. Frank house. So I'm super looking forward to it on Thursday.
Tell the folks again where they can catch the podcast, buddy.
So it's called Let Me Be Frank. You can find it at For the Bloggy on YouTube is where it's going to be hosted as of today and going forward. And then if anywhere you get your podcast, just search Let Me Be T. Frank and you'll find the audio version.
Appreciate the time as always, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Corey.
Thomas Frank Carr, good stuff there.